week marked what would have been the 100th birthday of Julia Child. She wasn't glamorous or perfectly polished, but she had us from that first lustily flipped omelet on the airwaves of WGBH. I'm Veronica Rickert, here today with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we take in the life and times of a woman who changed the way America ate, who made food both serious and fun, and reminded us that life should taste good. Our guest this hour is Bob Spitz. He's a journalist, author, and musician, and his books include The Beatles, the biography, and most recently, Deary, the remarkable life of Julia Child. And we welcome your questions and comments about Julia Child and stories about your own experiences cooking her legendary recipes at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us email to talk@WPR.org and leave your thoughts on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. And Bob Spitz, welcome.
Veronica, nice to be here.
Bob, you had the blessing to actually get to know Julia Child. And to be up front of it, you had a bit of a crush on her, right?
I did, yes. I met her in Sicily in 1992. I was over there writing a series of articles for magazines, and a friend from the Italian Trade Commission called and said, "We know you have some extra time while you're there. Would you mind being an escort for an older woman?" And, you know, I was taken aback. I said, I don't do that kind of work. But they said, "It's Julia Child." And I said, "I'll be right over." She was 82 at the time. She wanted to get to know Sicilian food, and she wanted to travel to restaurants, and needed her knees were giving out on her, as she had knee problems all her life. So she needed kind of a young arm to hold on to, and I was that arm, and what an experience. We did nothing but just eat and talk for almost a month, and I got to really understand what made this incredible woman tick.
That's a pretty incredible gig you had there, getting to spend that much time. And around food, you were eating with this woman who is really the first lady of modern cuisine in a way.
Exactly right.
Well, we can't really talk about her without talking about this big personality that she had, and because it was so unexpected. You didn't expect someone like that to be a superstar. Even if you take food out of the equation, I mean, on television, she was enormous. She was 6'3". She had this kind of bizarre, semi-hysterical sounding voice. But there was something about her, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. You know, Julia, I think, is really the first person to become a star on TV just by being herself. She was an ordinary woman. She wasn't glamorous, as you said. She had no media training to correct that savage warble that she had in her voice. She had no, battery of stylists to help her. In fact, I think she wore the same three blouses for 30 years. But she had something that caught people's attention. And I think what it was that it was like talking to a regular person. Someone who wasn't slick, someone who could have been your maiden aunt or your next-door neighbor, but who was so passionate about cooking and wanted you to absorb that passion. The whole package just kind of clicked with America at that time, and people fell in love. They really did. They fell in love, and they forgave her for all of her idiosyncrasies. In fact, those idiosyncrasies, they worked in her favor so much. She was Julia Child first, and she struck very hard, and people really clung to her for almost 45 years.
Now, you open your book with the story of her first appearance on WGBH. This is the Boston, public TV station that was looking for, I guess, the producers anyway, were looking for some new programming. And she got the gig to go on and make an omelet. And everyone thought this was so off the wall, that this person wanted to come and do what? They wanted to cook an omelet on TV. And they were flabbergasted by that.
Yeah, educational TV in those days was so rudimentary. It was all localized. You really have to look for the stations. And mostly what they showed were professors from local colleges or community colleges delivering a lecture, or if you had a local symphony orchestra, maybe they would perform, but with very little narration. There was a show at WGBH, as you said, called it was a professor who interviewed local people about their books. And Julia said she'd come on, but wanted to make an omelet. It was unheard of. It was heresy. They didn't know what to do with her. And when she walked on camera, she was tall, so they didn't know how to light her. It's incredible when we think about it that an omelet did this. But people saw her do it. They were so charmed by it that the phones lit up. And within a short point, as you said, Veronica, they offered her her own show. And that show really launched what we now know as PBS. She was the first educational TV star. She was syndicated, and that had never been done before. So you might say that all of PBS was launched off Julia Child's back.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
we have a little clip from the show. This is one where she's talking about some chickens.
The chicken sisters! Miss Broiler, Miss Fryer, Miss Roaster, Miss Capernet, Miss Stewart, and old Madam Hen. But we're spotlighting Miss Roaster of the Year, measuring in at 14, 15, 14. We're roasting Miss Chicken today on the French Chef. Welcome to the French Chef. I'm Julia Child. You know, we speak of a covey of quail and a gaggle of geese and a pride of lions. Well, this is known as a peep of chickens. That's their official name when they're in group, as they are.
And a clip there from the French Chef. And my producer pulled that clip. And when I first heard it, I thought, are you sure that's not a parody of Julia Child?
Right.
But I'm sure that it is not a parody of Julia Child. That is Julia Child. And
yeah, who talked like that? I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it's definitely inimitable. I mean, no one is like that. No one was like it then, but no one is like that today either. If you watch the cooking channel that she helped launch,
she didn't mind putting herself out there. She really she didn't think too much about it. It wasn't really planned. That whole persona, there was nothing planned about it. She was just herself. And to think that she'd never been on TV and really didn't rehearse that much, you know, especially as far as her persona went, to be able to be that spontaneous and that humorous, it's a natural unlike we've ever seen before. Everything today, you mentioned the cooking channel, when you look at it, it looks so forced, so put on. Everything is so planned to strike people in an odd way so that the star is remembered. Julia, just as I said before, she became a star just by being herself.
Well, one thing I didn't know about her, having seen Julie and Julia and knowing some of the sketches of her life, but she was a tough lady. And a couple of points to that effect, she was in the OSS during World War II, where she, I guess, maybe engaged in some mild espionage-type activities. And she, you tell the story about how she was at one point on board this notoriously deadly flight over the Himalayas. I think it was from India to China. And the plane lost altitude, and it dropped hundreds of feet. And everybody on the plane was crying and praying, but not Julia.
No, Julia was reading. She never lifted her eyes from the page of the book. You know, it was even worse than the plane dropping. It was so notorious for planes going down in that area that if you looked out the window, you could see twisted wreckage of airplanes all over the mountaintops. You know, Julia was she was a tough woman. She looked like a sweetheart on TV, but she had really nerves of steel. And I think maybe that's what allowed her to go on television, blindly and just, you know, fly without a net, which is what she did.
Although she did practice that first omelet for that first TV appearance about 15 times, I guess, right?
At least 15 times. One of the things about Julia is that she wanted to make sure that it was right. She didn't see herself as a cook first. She saw herself as a cooking teacher. Her entire life, she really felt that was her métier, and she was determined to get everything right. She didn't want her audience to have to encounter any errors in the recipes. So not only would she make an omelet like 10, 15, 20 times to make sure the ingredients did exactly what they were supposed to do, but say if she were making coleslaw, she would get every kind of cabbage that you could name and cook it at different boiling points. Hmm. She was so obsessive that when she made coleslaw, she got 6 or 7 different kinds of food processors to see how they chop the cabbage. She wanted to make sure it was perfect.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's how she became this master of French cooking. And you write about how when she took up French cooking in Paris, she was there with her husband, Paul Child. And right. She began these classes at Le Cordon Bleu that she would leave the class and she would immediately gather up the ingredients from what they just cooked and she'd go home and do it all again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just as you saw it in Julie and Julia. Stanley Tucci comes home from work, goes into the kitchen and sees Julia. She wanted to learn how to chop onions. She chopped dozens and dozens of onions. There were mountains of onions. Of course, she wanted to get the chop right. She wanted to really make sure that all the onion slices were the same width so that they cooked at the same degree. And then she would make lunch for Paul. So everything she learned, she cooked again and again that morning to make sure she got the recipe right so that when Paul came home, it was perfect. And then she would write it down, and she would work all night writing out the recipe to make sure the recipe was perfect. That's how she learned how to cook. And, you know, she did it after she was 40.
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, considering she was going into TV and learning a new skill, and most women are sort of settled into their track of life at that point, I guess usually a family track, she invented this whole new life for herself, this whole new vocation.
She did. She learned how to cook at the age of 40 at a point when her family said on her 40th birthday that Julia couldn't so much as boil water. So to be able to remake her life at that point, I think, is one of the most amazing things I encountered in my investigation of Julia's life.
Well, we've talked about how fastidious she was. I couldn't, you know, all the food processors she brought for coleslaw, for dicing cabbage. Mm-hmm. And we know that these recipes, they are meticulous. But on the other hand, she was such a warm, generous, spontaneous person. Does that ever seem contradictory to you that her recipes are sort of the height of perfectionism and that she herself had this shooting from the hip persona?
No, I think that's what makes her such a complex and amazing study and an amazing woman, too. She was an amalgam of everything. You know, Julia liked to tell bawdy jokes. She had a salty language. But if you stepped across a line, if you showed disrespect for people while you did that, the lights in her eyes would go out. So she knew that there was always a line in her work, in her life, however she was. She was maybe an amalgam of contradictions, but they all seemed to create that Julia Child character. I mean, they all just worked.
Now, you mentioned the movie Julie and Julia, which I guess it was from a couple of years ago or so, and it was the story of this New York woman who was disenchanted with her life, and so she decided to cook her way through Julia Child's cookbook, all of these French recipes, and it became a hit. It became a movie starring Meryl Streep and a pretty big deal, but Julia Child wasn't so crazy about that movie, and I've never been able to understand why. Do you?
Yes, it was made very clear to me by Judith Jones, who was Julia's editor at Knopf. People think that Julia never met Julie Powell, but it's not true. She did. She was really quite interested in what she was doing. I think she was amused by the fact that someone would cook their way through mastering the art of French cooking. Number one, it was a very difficult book. And number two, to cook through all those recipes took quite a deal of labor and fortitude. So Julia was intrigued. She was intrigued for a lot of reasons. Number one, it was a young person cooking French food. Julia always supported people who did that. And I think she wanted to see what made this young woman tick. So someone brought them together. And I think it may have been Judith Jones. I'm not sure. But when she met Miss Powell, she found a woman with, how can I say this diplomatically? She didn't have enough respect for what she was doing. Julia determined right away that this was some kind of a gimmick, that she had no great passion for food, and she was a bit disrespectful toward Julia.
Hmm.
Now, Julia could be lovable and funny, and she loved to joke with people, but she wasn't a person who would cotton to people disrespecting her, and the lights went out in her eyes immediately. She was finished with the whole project. That's what happened.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah, it's a sad missed opportunity.
On the other hand, it did bring Julia Child, not that she left the public eye or anything like that, but it did sort of bring her back to the front of everyone's mind again and celebrating Julia's recipes and cooking them again.
Yeah, it's true. It really did. Nora Ephron, who directed it, was really smart enough to weave in Julia's life story from her lovely memoir, My Life in France. And I think that's what people really, really loved. They loved that whole romance where Julia first falls in love with Paul and then falls in love with France and then falls in love with French cooking. And Meryl Streep was so great that, you know, it brought her not only to the attention of a new audience, to a larger audience and rekindled it, but it brought her to the attention of young women who, I'd say in their, you know, early, mid-20s, who never knew who Julia Child was. I've actually been meeting them across the country the last week while I've been out on tour. And this is an entire new generation who really is hungry to learn about Julia Child. It's fantastic.
Well, we have a clip from the movie Julie and Juliet. Let's take a listen.
Today, we will begin by learning to boil eggs. First, you must make sure that the egg is fresh.
I was so hoping that, for something a little more advanced, Madame Brassard.
But you are not an advanced cook.
But I do know how to boil an egg.
Do you know how to bone a duck?
No, but that's exactly the sort of thing that I'm very interested in learning how to do.
Mm. Mm. Ah. There is one other class, but you will not like it. It's for professional, which you will never be, I'm sure. All men, all GIs... And very expensive. I cannot imagine that you would ever want to pay the tuition.
How much?
A clip there from Julie and Julia, taste of Julia Child's first experience cooking in Paris. She, right from the start, there were those obstacles, as you heard there. Bob, can you give us a sense of what those first classes were like for her?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, that's such a great clip. Julia had a nemesis in the director of Le Cordon Bleu. Her name was Madame Brassard, and she ran that school like a despot. She was a tough old bird. Julia said there were only two people she really despised in her long life. One was Hitler, and the other one was Madame Brassard. So that's where she put her. The cards were stacked against Julia because, number one, she was an American, and number two, even worse, a woman. In those days, in the kitchens of restaurants, there were only men. It was not a place where women cooked professionally, and they sure didn't want Julia in that class. So she didn't want to be in what she called the housewife class, where she'd only learn how to, you know, hard-boil an egg. She wanted to be in something more professional. So the next thing she found was herself in a room with 11 American GIs. And these were guys who they had been on the slop line during the Army, and now they were getting ready to go back into their civilian lives. And they were going to do things like open, you know, open diners and little snack bars at golf ranges. So, you know, they were learning how to cook one way. Julia wanted to cook another way. But there she was with the 11 GIs, and they rolled her right into the class. And luckily, she encountered a real wonderful teacher, Chef Max Bunard, who became Julia's mentor. And he really taught her how to cook. And she separated herself from those guys pretty much right away.
Oh, it's an amazing story. Well, we're talking this hour with Bob Spitz. He is a journalist, author, and musician. His other books include The Beatles, the biography, and the one we're talking about today is called Dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. As we look this week at a celebration of her life, she would have been 100 years old this week. And we welcome your questions and your comments about Julia Child. Maybe you've cooked some of your way through mastering the art of French cooking. Well, give us a call and tell us about that. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we celebrate the life and times of Julia Child, who would have been 100 years old this week, and looking at how she transformed cooking in America with her watershed book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. Our guest is Bob Spitz. He's a journalist, author, and musician, and his latest book is called Dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. And Bob, let's talk about how she did change the landscape of the way Americans thought about food. How do you see that evolution unfolding?
Well, when Julia appeared on TV for the first time, Americans were in the middle of kind of I guess the earliest of fast food stages. They were cooking from cans. They were cooking from, you know, canned soup casseroles were a very big thing in those days. Or casseroles with hot dogs in them, and also prepackaged foods. People were cooking from with frozen vegetables or canned vegetables. I know growing up at the time, I never saw a head of broccoli in my life. I always thought that broccoli came in frozen packs. And my mom was the classic cook from that era. She would make those casseroles, or she would cook things to death because there was very little training. Julia changed that landscape right away. She wanted people to cook with fresh ingredients, maybe some ingredients they had never heard of before, like leeks and shallots. And she wanted people to make recipes that would taste great. It changed our palate pretty quickly. But it also changed something else. You know, Julia was really concerned about a woman's image in the home and a woman's image in society. And she wanted women to really be bold and creative in the kitchen and to go their own way and to step out from behind the stove and take bows. So there was all of that going on at that point. That's where the evolution started. And it really has never stopped since.
It's interesting in terms of how it affected women, because women were the people who were in the kitchen, who were getting the food on the table for the family. So in a way, you can see that, you know, maybe women wouldn't want to cook this involved food. But I guess her mission wasn't that, you know, you got to work harder in the kitchen. Her message was that food is an art form and that you need to cook it with passion. Is that right?
It is, and also that you could be creative and have fun while you cooked. When people saw Julia on The French Chef, they saw a woman who was enjoying herself in the kitchen and made it look easy. Not only made it look easy, but made that end product look like something gorgeous that you had never put on the table before. And I know in the case at my house, my mom would have that tablet on her lap Monday evenings while Julia did something on TV. And then Tuesday, that would be our dinner. And we were agog. I mean, we couldn't believe the good food that was suddenly, you know, and then my mother would call herself Julia Child of the House. People did that all over America. And that's what changed things. It made it easy to do. It made it lighter. It made it fun. And, of course, it made it so delicious that you couldn't deny the inevitable.
Do you have any favorite recipes from Mastering the Art of French Cooking?
Oh, I have tons of them, but I'll let you in on a little secret. I find Mastering the Art a little complicated. you know, her beef bourguignon is like 5 or 6 pages in Mastering the Art. It is the primo recipe for that particular dish. When she put out the French chef cookbook, it almost was like the Cliff's Notes version of Mastering the Art. And there was beef bourguignon done in 2 pages. So that's what I cook from. I love her beef bourguignon. I make her coq au vin. And then I skip around the books. I mean, in Julia Child's kitchen is also pretty easy to cook from. And it makes it kind of straightforward about what you can do in your own kitchen and put on the table.
I realized as I was reading this book that I've never cooked a Julia Child recipe before. And I think I just always assumed that it would be hard and I would end up tearing my hair out and screaming. But if I wanted to start with one, what would a good one be? A nice, easy, delicious recipe.
Well, go into the French chef cookbook. her beef bourguignon is really good. I think Julia thought that her recipe for roasting chicken was really her masterpiece. She always felt that if you could roast a chicken, you could put a gorgeous dinner on the table for your family, and that it was an art to do it, but once you learned, you'd never forget. And so that, she always felt, was the place to start, and I guess that would be my advice to you. Go roast a chicken.
I have to look for that, the Cliff Notes version you're talking about. I've seen the other one around.
The French Chef Cookbook.
Well, what do you think her legacy has been? As we look at the food scene in America, I've seen it expressed that she basically spawned the restaurant scene as we know it in America. She sort of is the reason that we have the James Beard Award. She elevated that to, you know, an art form again that was in the public eye, a prestigious award for cooking. What else did she do?
Well, you know, she sparked the Cooking Channel and the Food Network as well, and I don't know if we have her to thank for that or to regret. But she also, I'll tell you what else she did. She really was the spark plug for new American cooking. It was something at first that Julia didn't want to associate with. She was a French cook through and through, a French chef. And she liked the classic recipes. But she also loved being around young people. And when this new young crop of chefs came up in the 90s and then the 2000s and took their French training and spun it off into what we now know as new American cooking, where they were inventive and bold, that caught Julia's attention. And then she started looking for the young chefs who were doing really great stuff, like Alice Waters or people on that level. And she began to get involved in that and promote that as well, and promote young chefs. I think if she were here, she would say that her greatest achievement in the last 10 years of her life was making sure that these young chefs got known by people. And she encouraged people like Emeril Lagasse. She had met Emeril very early in his career and absolutely fell in love with him. She loved the way he cooked. He was so tactile with his food. When he made dinner for her, he told her how to, you know, pick up crayfish with her hands and break it apart with her hands and squeeze it and put it right in your mouth. And she loved that. But she felt, and this is really funny, she felt he had no personality on camera. Can you imagine? So she told him, she said, Emeril, you have to develop some kind of personality because your food, you have to teach your food on TV. but you need to find something that works for you. I'm not sure that the BAM and the kick it up a notch was what she had in mind, but there you have it. That's what we got.
Well, what did she think of the cooking channel? Did she watch it?
You know, she did. I think she felt two ways about the Food Network. She loved the fact that it took food and it really brought it to the masses. Anything that promoted food and cooking for young people was just absolutely what Julia loved. But I you know, Julia didn't believe in instant culinary stardom. She believed that you had to work hard, study, learn basic technique, you know, mastering, and then go and pay your dues. So all these young people who graduate from, you know, cooking school and then the next week open up a restaurant or find themselves on TV, you know, with bleached hair and some gimmick, I think she would have been appalled by their lack of subtlety.
Hmm. Well, we know a lot about her days in the limelight and some about her early life in the OSS. What was the end of Julia Child's life like?
The end of Julia Child's life was, you know, she was really out there, still kicking in, when she was 87, 88, 86, 87. She went on TV, you know, with Jacques Pepin and did Cooking with Julia and Jacques. And she was as feisty as ever and really found a whole new audience. But then her legs started giving out, and she'd had trouble with them all her life, as I said before, and developed abscesses in them and complications with her life. So she retired to Santa Barbara, a place where she had spent a lot of summers growing up. She was a California girl through and through and was really happy to get back there, and she became kind of like, you know, a celebrity in a small town that still loved her. Determined to break all the rules that her doctors imposed on her. She made sure she got taken out to restaurants every night, and she would have steak, and she was forbidden to have wine, but she sure found a way in every restaurant to get the sommelier to at least sneak her a half a glass of wine. But Julia ended her life very much the way she was throughout her life, on her own terms. It got to a certain point where, actually a certain day, when the doctor said to her, "Look, Julia, I can give you another 2 years. You'll have 2 years just like now, but you're going to have to be on dialysis, and it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world." And Julia made up her mind on the spot that morning that she had had enough, because he told her that if she didn't follow that plan, that she would die almost immediately. She developed sepsis, and she was with her her trusty companion, a woman who was her assistant, and worked with her, you know, through cooking and food. And that assistant wheeled her back to her room, and Julia said, and the assistant was crying the entire time. It was very dramatic because she knew what was going to happen. And Julia just said, "I'm going to take a nap now, dearie." And she did what she said she would always do one day, and that is what Julia called slip off the raft. Julia just slipped off the raft, and that was the end of her life, and she knew it, and it was done peacefully.
Hmm.
And it's the end of my book, and it's very dramatic, and I have to tell you, I was a grown man, but I found myself in tears as I wrote that scene. It was really a not just dramatic, but very endearing.
Well, it's a fitting ending that she chose it and that she was graceful and courageous about it, because that's how she lived her life.
It's true. And she really lived it up until the end. There's also a little scene. I guess it was a couple weeks before she died. She loved going to the movies, adored it. And she got her niece to take her to see Troy with Brad Pitt. And she was sitting in the audience, and, you know, Julia would talk out loud, and people knew that voice. They could hear it, and they knew right away who was in the audience. And she elbowed her niece, and she said, "Oh, that Brad Pitt, he is such a good-looking boy. I wonder what's underneath that toga."
Oh, my gosh.
Men.
Wow.
Right up until the very end, she was intrigued by young men.
Oh, that's great.
There you have it.
Well, yeah, it's no surprise there. I mean, she had that ribald sense of humor, and it seems like that kept going her entire life as well.
That's true.
Yeah, one thing that came as a surprise to me was the number of near misses she had in her life. I mean, she lived to a ripe old age, as you just described, but she had been in car accidents. There were house fires. There was that flight where she almost died in the Himalayas. And wasn't she booked on one of the September 11th flights at one point?
You know, she wasn't. Nobody ever knew this until I was doing some research in the book. And I looked at her tickets that she had. Julia kept everything. I mean, I went through hundreds of boxes of her archives, and there were tickets for that plane out of Boston for California on September 11th. She and her assistant were booked on it, and they were headed back to Santa Barbara. They had just finished cooking with Jacques Pepin. And at the last minute, the Smithsonian called and asked her to do a promo for the kitchen, which was being donated, her kitchen, which is now at the Smithsonian. And Julia didn't really want to. She couldn't wait to get back to Santa Barbara. She was exhausted from her shows with Jacques. They were very stressful for her. But she changed the tickets at the last minute. And I talked to her assistant, Stephanie, who said her parents, Stephanie's parents, thought they were on that plane. Only by the grace of God were they spared.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it? I don't know.
It is, and I didn't realize, Veronica, until you wrapped them all up in one sentence, of all those near misses that she did have in her life. You know, I spaced them out over the book, but until you wrapped them all up in that sentence, I didn't realize how calamitous it really was, that life.
Yeah, I mean, you think it's a miracle that she was with us all those years after everything
that's
she'd
true.
Been through. But, you know, we talked about her being tough, and there's another line in your book where she had developed breast cancer at one point in her life and had to have a mastectomy. And I guess she kept a diary or a journal, and the entry that way was "left breast off." You know, there's no hysterics there. It was matter of fact, and you can see how she might have survived some of these things because she had that inner fortitude.
She did. She, you know, people think that she was maybe of that Northeastern Puritan stock. She was a Pasadena, kind of a rich girl, a pampered girl, but she did have a strong Puritan stock. Her great grandfather was one of the governors of Massachusetts. So I think that comes out in her, that fortitude. You feel it and you hear it.
Well, we're talking about Julia Child this hour with author Bob Spitz, who was her friend and her biographer. He wrote Dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. She would have been 100 years old this week. And Bob was giving some advice on some beginning Julia Child recipes for me. What about you? What have you cooked, or what would you like to cook of Julia's recipes? And have you been intimidated by them? Have you tried them out? What do you think about the way that she's changed the face of the way that we look at food in America? We welcome your questions and your comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org or chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you this Friday on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we celebrate the life and the food of Julia Child, who would have been 100 years old this week. And we're talking with Bob Spitz, her biographer and her friend. He wrote the book Dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. And we take a phone call now. Cynthia is joining us from Waukesha. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that after I was married in 1963, and we were in Berkeley, California, studying at the university, I learned how to cook by watching Julia Child.
Mm-hmm.
And every week I would watch her programs, and then I would cook whatever she had cooked on that program for my new husband, who suffered through some major indignities, especially when I put on the table beef tongue. And I had to buy a whole beef tongue at the grocery, and he saw it sitting on the counter before he had to eat it. It was a bit of a shock.
How did it taste?
Well, there was a lot of beef tongue, and we ate it for several weeks.
Wow.
We got very tired of it, and I must confess I have never yet fixed it again.
Wow, are you brave? That was one of those recipes of Julia's that a lot of American homemakers did not cook.
I tried to do everything she suggested. And you had asked what would be a good one to start with.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that my children, once they arrived, would always ask for something that they called fishy chicken. And it was supreme.
Hmm.
And you pound out the chicken breasts, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breasts, really thin, and you saute them in butter, and then there's a lemon juice. And, you know, anyway, it's a very easy recipe. I used to make it when I got home from work after working all day, and I could pound out those supreme very quickly.
So it's called chicken supreme?
Yeah, supreme. And there are a lot of variations, of course, with her wonderful sauces. And I still make those to this day.
Well, that's wonderful, and I'll have
but I
that.
Don't make beef tongue anymore.
That might be for the best.
So, Cynthia, you really followed the trajectory of my mother, too. You really learned to cook, and then you'd put that dish on the table
right.
every week.
Yeah.
And did your family finally gravitate to what you were making?
Well, you know, as the children came along and as life got very, very busy, I didn't have time to make some of those more exotic recipes. But whenever I did make one, yes, they ate it quite happily.
Huh. And, great.
And I still love cooking, you know, and I always think of Julia. She taught all the basic techniques. She taught you. I learned everything, how to use knives and, you know, all the terminology. And it was a great experience. And it was certainly a kind of relief from the studying I had to do for school.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of story that Julia would have loved because, as I said before, she really thought of herself as a teacher first. She would have been charmed to hear that story.
Well, I just have finished reading her book, My Life in France, which is fabulous. And I highly recommend it to anybody who's really interested in her life.
Well, that's, you know, now it's time to gravitate to my book because her life in France was only about her life in France, and there's so much more to the story. So
there is
sure.
so much there.
I will definitely take a look at your book.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Cynthia.
You're welcome. Bye.
And we go next to John joining us from Mequon. Hi, John. John, are
Good
you there?
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Wonderful show. As I told you, screener, my wife and I went to Paris on our honeymoon, and it just so happened that we stayed on the Île Saint-Louis, and there was a wonderful little brasserie at the end of the street, and I had my first cassoulet there, and I was so struck by the complexity and how, and it was cold, and just how good it was at noon, that I kind of insisted that I have cassoulet every noon for the 12 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I indulged myself. But eventually, we got involved in a cooking group, four couples, and the deal was that we would pick something when we hosted the dinner from her cookbook. And I, of course, not being very smart, let's just say that, I picked cassoulet, and it took most of 2 days to prepare that dish. And as I remember, it was edible, but in no way comparable to the wonderful dishes that I had in Paris.
I haven't had cassoulet, John, but I've heard that it is maybe the most complicated recipe in mastering the art of French cooking. But I don't know.
It probably is.
What is it, Bob, and how do you make it?
Well, it's a bean dish that has duck and pork and they have to really mature over days, sometimes weeks. It takes a long time to make cassoulet. But, you know, John had the same experience that Julia had. She went to France, had never tasted French food, had that wonderful lunch in Rouen, and it changed her life. And it sounds like that cassoulet that John had did the same thing.
And, John, are you going to try it again, or is that it for you and cassoulet cooking?
Oh, no. I'm basically fearless, but it requires that my guests be fearless, too.
Great.
It was it was a great experience, and nothing that's really has the potential to be that good is easy.
Right.
That's true. Exactly right.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your cassoulet experience with us.
Great, great show. Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
And we have a Facebook message from Karen, who says, I met Julie around the time that Bob did, but right here in Mequon, Wisconsin, at the restaurant that I was chefing at the time. She was doing a class at a culinary store down the way, and she came in to visit our restaurant called La Boulangerie, where we had fixed many of her special recipes for that week, and it was such a thrill, as she is and was a hero of mine. She ended up signing the wall of the restaurant, which is now called Cafe 1505, and they've preserved that signature over the years. So...
She did that all over. She would go into restaurants unannounced, and, you know, people would, like, faint dead away when she walked in. And she'd march right back into the kitchens, and she'd shake everybody's hands, want to get to know even the dishwasher and see what they were cooking and taste the sauces. And she was just really gracious like that, and she traveled all over to do that.
Do you have any sense what Julia Child's favorite meal was? You know, she had to pick a last meal, what it would have been.
Well, I actually know what her last meal was, but I will tell you, it goes back to her roast chicken recipe. That was her favorite dish. She cooked that time and again in her house, and whenever she had friends come for dinner, it would either be roast chicken or perhaps a boneless leg of lamb. But for her last meal, Julia turned to one of her 40-year-old recipes that she taught people on an early French chef. It was French onion soup. She made it for herself. She was 91. She sat. She had two bowls. And so whenever anybody wanted to know what Julia's last meal was, that was it. It was her French onion soup.
Mm. Have you made that one?
I have. And it's not so difficult. And it is spectacular. It's one of the best onion soups you could ever taste.
Comfort food.
You bet.
Well, I want to listen to one more taste of Julia Child before this hour ends. And this is a clip of Julia Child appearing on, of all places, David Letterman.
Yeah.
Well, tonight we're going to cook right here.
A hamburger.
A
very fine hamburger.
Okay.
And here it is, right here. Very fine meat.
Hamburger.
This is some of the best meat that came over from Good Morning America, because they all look at your show. They all look at your show and they said, David's got to have the best.
This is Good Morning America meat?
It certainly is.
Well, what's the ground beef going for these days?
This was $1.29. Mm-hmm. Very good. We got 10% off because it was Good Morning America. Now we're going to fix it up. 8 o'clock in the morning.
Have you ever cooked something, Julia, that just turned out awful?
Yes, lots of times.
Yeah, and what do you do then? What happens?
I give it to my husband.
A clip of Julia Child making a hamburger on David Letterman. Dang, she was funny, wasn't she?
Is that a natural comedian or what? I mean, she that was right from the hip. She didn't even have to think about that.
Oh, I love it. Was she still that funny when you knew her when she was an older woman?
Absolutely. Julia had the best sense of humor I think I've ever encountered in anyone. And, you know, again, part of that was that she wasn't afraid to use it. She didn't watch herself, you know, in any kind of situation. That humor would come to the fore, and she just let it fly. It was great.
We've got an email here I want to read from Mary. She says, one recipe that was a favorite in our house came from a visit to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, where she made a spaghetti dish with tuna, pimento, Swiss cheese, and nuts. My husband was watching with the kids, and they made the recipe for dinner, and forever after, it was Mr. Rogers' spaghetti. And she says, a few years ago, my kids, who are now in their 20s, wanted it again, but we couldn't find the recipe, so she Googled Julia Child and Mr. Rogers and spaghetti and found the recipe. What she likes about Julia Child was her humor when things did not go as planned. So lots of different experiences there. Do you remember that Mr. Rogers spaghetti?
You know, I don't. But things didn't go as planned a lot for Julia. I'll let you in on a little secret. Julia was a great cooking teacher, maybe the best. But Julia wasn't always such a great cook. Things didn't turn out so great when she made her own recipes at home a lot, and a lot of dinner guests told me that. But Julia had one rule of thumb, and she told this to everyone she met. You never apologize. You just put that food on the table. If it's a complete disaster, you serve it. You don't say anything about it. and you just smile. And that was her creed. She did that time and time again.
Yeah, I came across that in your book. And you know what? I think that's going to change my cooking life. I love that you don't apologize, because I'm probably the more neurotic school where it comes out a little weird. And I say, does it taste all right? It's a little weird. But I'm never going to apologize again. If Julia Child didn't apologize, nobody else needs to.
I'm with you. I do the same thing. Exactly right.
Well, Bob, it's been so much fun talking with you this hour. Thank you so much for bringing Julia to life with us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
This week would have marked the 100th birthday of Julia Child, and this hour we are celebrating that life and that delicious food and that wonderful personality with our guest, Bob Spitz, who's a journalist, an author, and a musician. He's got a new book out called Dearie, The Remarkable Life of Julia Child. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Marika Suval for producing this hour, and to Brittany DeAnda for technical direction this morning. And here's hoping we all go and try out a Julia Child recipe, maybe this weekend. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.